Morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're focusing on Yechezkel Perek Chof Dalet, the 24th chapter of Sefer Yechezkel. This chapter essentially has two symbolic nevuos, two symbolic prophecies that Yechezkel is going to present to the nation of Israel. And this is really the closing chapter of rebuke. The first section of Sefer Yechezkel runs from Perek Aleph to Perek Chof Dalet, which is this Perek. From the next little section we will have the next section of the Sefer, which is the Nevuah, the prophecies to the nations of the world. So this closes it, and it closes on a very harsh note. The two symbolic prophecies he is about to witness are very disturbing. The first is what's called the symbol of the pot. So what happens is he tells them the following. This prophecy actually occurs in the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu, in the 10th month, on the 10th of the month. So this is clearly the reason for the fast of Asara Mataves, and it is the day that Nebuchadnezzar starts the final siege. Very clear, he explicitly says this. So then Hashem tells Yechezkel to take a pot and pour water into it and place it on the stove, to put it on the fire to start boiling it. And he's told to cut the best part, to take the best cuts of meat into the pot, the thigh, the neck bone, put the fattest sheep into it. But what's going to be unique is that fuel is going to be bones. Bones are going to be used as a fuel in addition to wood, and it's going to be cooked until the bones and the meat can no longer absorb. They're going to get dried out. There's going to be ratach resacheho. It's going to be boiling and very, very hot for a long time. And he goes on. He goes on to explain somewhat the Nimshal. He says, the oil ir hadamim sir asher chel asa ba. Woe to the pot of Yerushalayim, which is the city of blood. Chel asa ba, the sickness, or the, we'll call it the poison, isn't it? The chel asa lo yotza mimenu lenechas lenasachel nesachel hotzia. The poison doesn't leave it, so it has to be taken out piece by piece. The nafala le'al goral, and there's not going to be any specific order that the pieces are going to fall out of it. And in fact, it goes on to describe how that there was blood in this pot, and so when it's poured out, the blood wasn't even covered. It didn't go into the earth. It sort of stayed on top of the stones. It was loish shefach tuhu ala aritz lechasois ala vafar. It isn't even poured onto the earth that it's able to be absorbed or covered. And this is going to be the blood of vengeance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes on further to say, woe to the city of blood, because as they increase the evil, I ratchet up the fire beneath the pot. He increases the firewood, he adds spices that are given to overcooked foods, and slowly the bones dry up in the heat, and everything burns away in this pot. You can imagine the smell of the metaphor as everything burns away. For those husbands who've ever done any cooking, you know, sometimes this is something which unfortunately husbands are aware of, that the terrible smell of a burned pot, and everything goes away, everything disappears, the content disappears. And because there's no teshuvah, it can't be fixed, it's going to be burnt away completely. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because there was no teshuvah done, he's not going to listen to any of the calls of pain. Rather, he is going, lo yachus v'lo yanachem, I'm not going to have mercy. There's not going to be any comfort, because I'm going to do kidrochayef ka'al olosayich shefatuch. I'm going to judge you based on your terrible actions. That's the end of the first section of this parak. So let's just understand what's going on over here. What is the point of the mashal? So if you recall, going back into parak Yud Aleph, the children of Israel, or the people surviving in Yerushalayim, said, ah, we're like a pot. We will survive. The pot walls, Yerushalayim, will protect us from all harm. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, oh really? The pot's going to protect you? No. The pot will be what you'll be killed in, what you'll be boiled alive in. That's what Hashem is saying, to respond to their false sense of security of the walls of Yerushalayim. That's why the prophecy is being used as a pot, says the Mitzvah Stavet. Why is it that the bones are used as fuel? So what the Mitzvah says here is a fascinating thing. This is one of the very nasty aspects of the society of Yerushalayim at this time, following from the times of Yehoyakim and going to the times of Tzidkiyahu, is the oppression of the weak, people taking advantage. We know that in the first siege they freed their slaves, their Jewish bondsmen, that they never let free. People took advantage of the weak in society to pay the taxes, to work for them. There was no accountability, there was no sense of equality. So the bones are ultimately the people that they oppressed, but those bones are going to be the fuel for the fire which burns them, says the Metzudas. It's going to burn you up in your sin. What's the idea that's in this meaning as he described the pot being emptying the pot limb by limb? So he says, can you imagine, like, you know, when you have let's say you have a stew boiling, and there's something bad in the stew. There's like sort of like a, you know, something which needs to be removed. Let's say it's a poisonous liquid or something that needs to be removed from it. So, and but the problem is it sinks to the bottom, so there's no way to get it out. So what you try to do is you try to pour out, you know, like in dollops, like pieces of the stew so that it's not affected by it. So to leave the poison at the bottom, essentially. And so when you pour it out, as he points out, not everything good always comes out. It's just, you know, sloshing out everything that falls out as you do it limb by limb. So he's saying that's what happened. The Golos of Yechoniah was, in a certain sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to remove the good a little bit beforehand, but not all of it was necessarily good as it falls out. Which in a certain sense you can imagine now. So what's left symbolically in Yerushalayim is the poison at the bottom of the pot. The people, the negative, the bad people, the ironically the better people left before in the Golos of Yechoniah. And finally, what's the idea of this blood being poured onto the stone when he says the blood of the pot's going to be poured onto the stone? He said, this is an indication that the oppression and the murder that took place in Yerushalayim without accountability was, it's almost like it was public. It wasn't, they didn't even have the shame to cover the blood that they were pouring or misusing, which is why it's poured out onto the stone, not the ground. It isn't even absorbed. Just an interesting point over here is that Yechezkel indicates that if they'd done it Teshuvah, they could have avoided this. But how is that possible? How could Teshuvah help them in this if they really deserved so much of a terrible treatment? So the Sharei Teshuvah, Rabbeinu Yonah tells us that when a person goes through the real process of remorse, they feel really, really bad. And they sit there in contrition, thinking about their terrible actions. They suffer because of the regret they feel. That suffering will take the place of the suffering that a person, Rachman Lezon, may have had to experience in life. Yechezkel is saying, you didn't do that, so the suffering that is due to come is going to come now. It's too late. Interesting halachic tidbit on this is that the Gemara Brachos on Daf Nun Vav Mabez tells us, Haroya Kedera B'chalom, a person who wakes up and having seen a pot boiling in their dream, Yashkim V'yomar Hashem Tishpos Shalom Lonu. A person, he should say a pasuk, which is that Hashem should pour over the pot of peace, rather than thinking of the pasuk of in Yechezkel, which is Shvas Hasir Shvois, that the pot is going to be put on the fire because it's a terrible prophecy. We don't associate it with this. Move on to the last section of this and the second vision of this prophecy, which is running from Perek Pasuk Tes Vav till the very end, till Pasuk Chav Zayin, and this is the most terrible thing we can hear about. This is that Yechezkel is told that the one who is dearest in his own life will pass away. This is his referring to his wife. And he'll not be able to cry, mourn, or eulogize. So he's told in the most famous pasuk, "Ha'anek dom," so remain silent. "Mesim evel," "Mesim avim," there's no mourning. "Loisasei peirocha chavoy sholecha," you're going to "Mesim evel loisasei," you can't do the regular avelos. "Peirocha chavoy sholecha," you wear your beautiful hat. "Na'alcha unalecha tosim baraglecha," you're going to place your shoes on your feet. "V'loisatei al safam," you can't cover your face, your head. "V'lechem anoshim loitochel," you can't eat others' bread. So he's told that there's certain restrictions in what he's able to do when his wife passes away. In fact, so shocking is this. He's told about this in the morning, and he's supposed to tell the people about this prophecy in the morning, and that evening his wife passes away out of a gefa, a plague, clearly not the sin of Yerushalayim, as Mepharshim point out. And everybody says, Yechezkel, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And he says, you know, I'll explain to you. Because Hashem is going to destroy the base of Mikdash. He's going to kill all the remaining Jews there. He says, but you won't be able to mourn. You're not going to be able to perform all these actions like I was not able to. And then you will be like Yechezkel. And finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu closes this prophecy by saying that there will come the day, by Yomahu Yavoa Polit Alecha, the refugee of Yerushalayim is going to come and he's going to tell the news. And finally, the people of Bavel, finally the people of Yerushalayim will finally believe everything Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu have been saying. So just a few points to think about over here. Why isn't it that the Bnei Israel will be able to mourn? Why can't the children of Israel mourn when Yerushalayim, when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed? So Mitzvot points out two potential reasons. One is because there's nobody who's going to be able to comfort you. All of you are in the same state of mourning. So there's no one from the outside. It gives you a sense of what a comforter is supposed to do in the Havelos. Being on the outside to show that life can return to normality. There is no one outside in normality at this point in time. And also because, says the Mitzvot, is because you're all guilty. You have this terrible sense of guilt. There is no Nechama because you were guilty of this death. That's where the weapon is all first by. There's an interesting amount of halachas learned from this section. The Rambam paskins based on the Gemara in Moed Katan that an Ovel, based on what Yecheskel is not allowed to do, indicates what a normal Ovel, a normal person who's an Avelos, Rachman and Lisan, has to do. So example, a person who's an Avelos, if it's a man, cannot put that person cannot put on tefillin and eat their own food for the first day. They can't wear regular shoes. They can't talk about Divrei Torah. They can't uncover their hair, and also Mishael Hashon, and they can't speak to other people. Why are these all learned directly from the Pesukim in Yecheskel? What Yecheskel is not allowed to do, which by implication shows us what regular Avelus is. Why this metaphor? This is such a heavy thing. How does this work? So Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chof Bezim Rav tells us that Kol Odom Shemesa Ishto Rishona, Rachmanin is on a person whose wife dies first, Ki'ilu Chorav Beis Hamigdash V'yom. It's like the Beis Hamigdash was destroyed in their days. Everything in their life comes crumbling down, and is learned from these Pesukim in Yechezkel. The destruction is going to be incorrectable. Even if life continues afterwards, there's something there'll be a scar there which will never return. That's why it's being used for Yechezkel. But how is that possible? Why does this work? So some of the Mephoshim say, and yep, this is the responsibility of a leader. A leader, meaning to say, Yecheskel is so intertwined with his experience that it's going to affect him in such a real and such a penetrating and painful way that, yes, this is exactly what it's going to look like. Very, very painful to read about. But the Chida points out, and this is just something worthwhile bearing in mind, the Chida in his commentary, Chomas Anach, on Tanakh, points out, quoting the Arizal talked a lot about Gilgulim, about Neshama's return, and he points out that the Neshama of the wife of Yecheskel, who he loved dearly, was actually the Neshama of the second twin girl born with Hevel. When Adam and Rishon and Chava had their first children, they had Cain and a twin, and Hevel and two twins. And one of the reasons that Cain killed Hevel was because Hevel had two twins who ultimately they had to marry because there was no one else on earth at this point in time. And Cain killed Hevel and took the second twin sister of Hevel, and says the Chida that ultimately what happens over here is Yecheskel is Mishoresh Kayan, and what happens is ultimately the losing of this neshama, his wife, is a correction for that ultimate story in Bereishis Perek Dalet. And of course the neshamas themselves don't necessarily, or the people themselves in the emotional psychological makeup don't feel that experience and don't necessarily sense that, but what the Chida is saying is that this neshama chose this life which should be cut short because this is the correction needed in its process of correction. So there is a bigger perspective, not just the specific suffering. This ends the period of Puranos, of punishment, and as we move on to the prophecy of the nations, and then the Nechama, we're going to see a different tune as we carry on Yecheskel. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.